All right, Alexander, let's talk about a TASS news agency video series called 20 Questions to Vladimir Putin. And in the 10th installment of this series, which you can actually find on the TASS website, but you can also find it on YouTube if you just punch in 20 Questions to Vladimir Putin. I'll actually put a link for that video series in the description box down below. Putin gets into the Molotov-Ribbentrop agreement, World War II, and how the European Union recently has kind of lumped the USSR in with Nazi Germany as being the instigators of that world war. And Putin really had some harsh words to the European Union and was very frank and open about how he thought history viewed World War II. So get into what Putin said, and then we'll also get into some comments Putin made about his relationship with U.S. President Trump as well from the same video series.
This is a very interesting series, and I again, it's a good example of Putin as he actually is, as opposed to the sort of caricature figure that you read about, you know, if you spend all your time reading the mainstream media in the West. I mean, he's a very well-informed, historically minded man. And of course, when he discusses the issue of the start of the Second World War, he's treading in places where some people would be perhaps afraid to go. Now, the point is that Russians care a lot about the Second World War. It was for them a tremendous existential war in which 27 million Soviet citizens, not just Russians, died to defeat Nazi Germany, and where the Nazi armies came almost to the gates of Moscow, and they were pushed back, and they were driven back all the way to Berlin. And as we know, it was the Soviet army that actually captured Berlin, surrounded the bunker where Hitler was and where he committed suicide. And for the Soviets and for the Russians, this is an absolutely, or you know, sacred event, does not come close to describing how they feel about it. Everybody's family in Russia has been touched by this experience. If you watch the Victory Day celebrations that take place in Russia every year on the 9th of May, you will see that millions of people turn out with the pictures of their relatives who fought and died in the Second World War. And bear in mind that this year is the 75th anniversary celebration of what for the Russians is that victory. Now, confronted by this, you know, faced with this, what the Russians are now seeing is this attempt in the West, which has been picked up recently by the European Parliament, to equate the Soviet Union with Nazi Germany and to insinuate that Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union were equally responsible for the start of the Second World War. Now, he is pushing back extremely hard on this, as Russians generally will. And the issue, the thing that this touches on, that it revolves around, is the Nazi-Soviet non-aggression pact of the summer of 1939. And what Putin is saying is that there is no question of that non-aggression pact being any kind of alliance. It was something that the Soviet Union was forced into, because its various offers of alliance with the Allies to restrain Nazi Germany and to preserve peace and to contain Hitler were refused. And he makes the point that the Soviet Union, what it did was fundamentally no different. In fact, it was considerably less compromising than what the Western powers had previously done when in November 1938, they sat down with Hitler in Munich and agreed to the carve-up of Czechoslovakia, which they had been previously pledged to protect. So he says that the Soviet Union acted in its own interests. It did not start or instigate World War II. World War II was instigated by Hitler and Nazi Germany. and that the Allies, the Western Allies, Britain and France, actually appeased Hitler and did more to prepare the grounds for the Second World War than the Soviet Union did. Firstly, by appeasing Hitler in Munich, and then by spurning Soviet proposals for an alliance, a defensive alliance against Hitler in the spring of 1939. So this is what he says. He also goes into considerable detail about Poland's role, because of course one of the countries that has been pushing most heavily this narrative that the two that the Nazi Germany and the USSR were equally responsible for the start of the World War is, well, not perhaps Poland, but the present Polish government. And he points out that at Munich in 1938, the Poles and the Germans were acting in concert, and that Poland was also somehow responsible, but was responsible for the carve-up of Czechoslovakia, and actually itself annexed parts of Czech territory alongside the Germans. So he is not looking for a quarrel with the West on this issue. He's not looking for a quarrel with the Poles on this issue. He's spoken at great length about the fact that he wants better relations with the Poles. He's also pointed out in this same interview that if people are worried about the protocol, the secret protocol of the non-aggression pact between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, well, the Soviet Union itself, in the last months of its life, repudiated that pact. So he is saying, what he is saying is that the claim of equal responsibility between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union is untrue and false, and in fact, politically driven and politically motivated by certain politicians in Europe, in Poland especially, and in specifically in the European Parliament. And he is pushing back very strongly against it. As far as he is concerned, as far as most Russians are concerned, but not just most Russians, the overwhelming majority of Russians are concerned, Russia and the Soviet Union was a victim of Hitler's aggression, in no sense an ally, as indeed Poland also was. So he is, as I said, pushing back on what he considers a totally false narrative. And incidentally, I agree with him. I also think that this narrative is fundamentally false and flawed in many ways, and I've written about this in many places.
Okay, let's go back to the interview, Alexander, with TASS and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Let me read you an excerpt, a couple paragraphs from RT. The candid talk became intense as Putin unloaded on the notorious 2019 resolution of the European Parliament, which claims Molotov-Ribbentrop paved the way for the outbreak of the war. Quote, "Some ignorant people," the president said, "are spouting all kinds of garbage without mentioning who signed what with Hitler." President Putin stated that the act, officially known as the Treaty of Non-Aggression between Germany and the USSR, wasn't the first one of the kind signed back then, and some Western leaders didn't hesitate to strike deals with Adolf Hitler. And think what you will about Joseph Stalin, he did try to maintain a distance when dealing with the Führer, the Russian president said. By the way, Stalin, regardless of what anyone thinks of him, a tyrant or whatever, never disgraced himself by having direct or face-to-face contact with Hitler. What's more, not a single document ever signed by both Stalin and Hitler whatsoever. In contrast, there are documents, quote, signed by Hitler and the British Prime Minister, Hitler and the Prime Minister of France, and also by both Hitler and the leader of Poland. They worked with Hitler, quote, held numerous meetings with him and betrayed Czechoslovakia, Putin said, referring to the infamous 1938 Franco-British-German deal, also known as the Munich Betrayal, under which Hitler annexed neighboring Austria and seized the mainly German-inhabited Sudetenland of southern Czechoslovakia. Alexander, what do you make of those comments?
Well, you see how angry Putin is about this issue. And of course, it reflects also the anger that many Russians feel. Not many Russians, the overwhelming majority of Russians feel about this issue. I have to say this also. I mean, his narrative, I think his account of the war, which until a few years ago was the universally accepted one in the West also, by the way, is essentially true. The Soviets did agree this non-aggression pact with Nazi Germany in 1939, the summer of 1939. By this point, Hitler had already decided to attack Poland. I mean, Hitler was already going to attack Poland, irrespective of whether or not that non-aggression pact was ever signed. And Britain and France were already committed to going to war with Germany if Hitler attacked Poland. So the non-aggression pact did not start the Second World War. This is a complete fallacy. It has no basis in fact. And anybody who argues that it did simply doesn't understand the history properly. I'm not surprised, because it is a complicated history. And of course, when he says that other countries entered into far more extensive relations with Hitler than the Soviet Union did in the run-up to the war, he's absolutely right. The British and the French prime ministers met Hitler in Munich and came to the agreements, the notorious agreements in Munich, which they did, which, as I said, ended up in the carve-up of Czechoslovakia. The British government pursued very forcefully its a policy of appeasement towards Hitler. It repeatedly rejected proposals for an alliance with the Soviet Union to stop Hitler. And in fact, by the way, just for everybody's information, I recently been reading the diary of Ivan Maisky, the Soviet ambassador to London during this period, which is a huge diary. It's recently been published in the United States by Yale University. So you can find it. You can find a shortened version of it, by the way, on Amazon. It's available to read. And it shows, that shows how hard the Russians, the Soviets, did try to set up this alliance, and how frustrated they became when they found that it just wasn't working. And I would add, by the way, that it wasn't just the Germans, it wasn't just the British and the French who were making deals with Hitler during this period. So, of course, were lots of other countries. He mentions Poland, which concluded a non-aggression pact with Nazi Germany in 1934. And as I said, participated in the carve-up of Czechoslovakia in 1938, but other countries which also, made non-aggression pacts with Germany in 1939, incidentally, were the three Baltic states. So lots of people were working with alongside Germany throughout the 1930s. The Soviets did try to form an alliance with virtually everybody else, all the attempts to create this alliance had failed. They did a non-aggression pact with him. But this came at the end of a long procession of agreements with Hitler, which, of course, did pave the way to the Second World War. And by the time that non-aggression pact was signed, war in Europe was inevitable anyway. The purpose of that non-aggression pact was not to start the Second World War, which, as I said, Hitler had already decided to begin by this point. It was to keep the Soviet Union out of it. That's why they did it, because at that point, the Soviets would have found themselves in a war without allies, a war with Hitler without secure allies. So, it's a complicated subject. If people want to get a good overall picture of the negotiations, in my opinion, the best book is still the book that was written by A.G.P. Taylor back in the early 60s, The Origins of the Second World War, which goes into the diplomacy in great detail. But you can supplement it now with considerable archival documents, which tend to bear out that picture that Taylor made in the early 60s, including works by Oleg Gorodetsky, Jeff Roberts, the British historian, Jeffrey Roberts, and others. And you will find there that there is a fairly comprehensive picture by reputable academic historians that cover all these issues in very great detail.
Okay, so we can get to the second part of the video, which is Putin's comments on his relationship with Trump. Real quickly, Alexander, so we can tie this part up. Who was leading the UK at the time? Who was leading France at the time when they were trying to negotiate with Hitler? And why were so many countries striking deals with Germany back then? Was it to avoid a war which Hitler had already decided to pursue anyway? So why were all these countries? You mentioned the Baltic states, you mentioned Poland, we talked about UK, France, the Soviet Union. Why were they all sitting down with Hitler at that time?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I'm going to say straightforwardly that I know that there is a very widespread view, and there is that's particularly common in Russia, by the way, that it was all part of some attempt to create an anti-Soviet alliance, and that the British were trying to divert Hitler eastwards so that he would go to war with the Soviet Union. And I think Stalin, at some level, did think that, by the way. But I think overall, what everybody was anxious to avoid in the 1930s was a repeat of the First World War. They'd already all suffered terribly during the First World War, and they didn't want to see another war in Europe. So the British and the French,
the leaders as well,
Neville Chamberlain and Daladier, were looking to avoid war. They, as of course, in 1939, Stalin did the same thing. That's why all of these people were coming to deals with Hitler. Now, Stalin never did meet with Hitler. And by the way, he did actually say to Ribbentrop, that was Hitler's foreign minister, when he came to Moscow, that he refused outright to incorporate in the non-aggression pact any language about friendship between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union, because he said, we can't talk about friendship after all that's happened between our two countries. And he did refuse to meet with Hitler, and he did do something in that respect, which the other allied countries, the British and the French, their leaders did meet with Hitler, exactly as Putin says. But ultimately, what everybody wanted was to avoid either a war or getting drawn into a war. The person who wanted war in the late 1930s, in 1939, was Hitler. It was Hitler who wanted world war. Now, again, this is an issue which is controversial. And Taylor, whose book I have spoken about, correctly, I mean, he wondered, in the early 60s, there was some issue about whether Hitler really did want war. In 1939, we now know, because we have an awful lot more information than Taylor did in the early 60s, that Hitler did actually want law. Again, if you want to read good accounts of this, perhaps for me, the best account in English, the best writer in English of Hitler's policies is Adam Tooze. But, there's lots of others also. We have a fairly good understanding of German foreign policy in the run-up to the Second World War. Hitler wanted war. Everybody else was trying to avoid a war because Hitler was in a position to start a war. He did so, and everybody was trying to cut deals with him, which in the end didn't work because he broke all of them. That's the true story of the start of the Second World War. You can argue it and spin it in every kind of way you want. There's all these so-called revisionist historians out there. But, the documentary narrative based on the archives tells a different story. It tells the story I've just set out. And that is the way we've got to understand this. Can I say something else, by the way? One of the other things that clearly Putin does want, and I really want to say this, I know a lot of our viewers come from Poland. Putin wants reconciliation with Poland. And various people in Poland, I know, understand, I think, what an important thing to stabilize the current situation in Europe that would be. Today's Russia is no threat to Poland. It has no ambitions to take over Poland. It has no interest in acquiring Polish territory. Poland and Russia, two countries I know well, and like hugely, and I know lots of Polish people, and I know lots of Russian people, These two countries, in my opinion, are natural friends. And, you know, holding on to all these quarrels about the origins of the Second World War, which are based on incorrect readings of history, in my opinion, is not helpful. What it does is it holds back the reconciliation between these two great Slavic nations, which, if they were to establish peace, it would stabilize Eastern Europe. And I cannot think of anything which would improve the prospects of peace in Europe more than a rapprochement between Poland and Russia. The sooner that happens, the better for everyone it would be. And I was very interested to see recently that Lech Wałęsa, who was, of course, the leader of Solidarnosc, who led the opposition to the communist government in Poland, the Soviet-imposed communist government in Poland in the 1980s, has now recently made a call for exactly that. I hope people in Poland are listening. I know people in Russia want that. So let's see it happen, please.
Okay. Talk about rapprochement. Also in the TASS video series with Putin, he talks about his relationship with Trump. And let me go back to RT Alexander and rejoin Exert, and you can comment on this real quickly and we'll wrap up this video. Since reaching the Kremlin, Vladimir Putin has dealt with four different U.S. presidents and is well placed to judge the status of Russo-American relations. It's hardly surprising that his evaluation is rather negative. Quote, on a scale from 1 to 5, I would give it a 3, Putin said in an interview with Russian news agency TASS. Quote, between a 2 and a 3, more like a 3, though, end quote. In the Russian school system, where students are graded out of a 5, there is roughly equivalent to a C grade and a 2 to a D grade. The president cited the growth in trade since the inauguration of Donald Trump as a positive aspect of the current relationship, as well as cooperation in the field of counterterrorism. In particular, Putin singled out an episode in which a U.S. intelligence tip-off enabled Russia to apprehend an Islamic State, IS, formerly ISIS, terrorist cell in St. Petersburg. Quote, look, we cooperate on counterterrorism, he explained. It was actually I who called Trump to thank the U.S. for giving us information about the terrorist cell. They had been looking into them for a long time, and after that, the FBI provided information to the Federal Security Service. Putin also pointed out to some negative aspects of the current relationship with the United States, focusing on the use of sanctions and the non-extension of the START Weapons Control Treaty. Alexander, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think he's been very optimistic when he grades the state of the U.S.-Russian relationship at the moment as high as a 3. I'd put it between 1 and 2, probably closer to 1. I think it is awful. I mean, yes, they do cooperate at a very, very basic level. On counterterrorism, because of course counterterrorism is a major threat to both countries. And I do believe that Donald Trump personally loathes terrorism. I'm not sure everybody in the U.S. government loathes it to the extent that he does. I mean, if we look at Syria, it's been a very depressing fact to what extent some people in the U.S. government have been prepared to sit, you know, alongside al-Qaeda and groups like that in their efforts, for example, to destabilize the Syrian government. And that is still a continuing policy. But, you know, let's accept that there is some degree of coordination and cooperation between the US and Russia on anti-terrorism things. As for the improvement in trade, the first thing to say about that is that it's happened from an incredibly low level, given how, you know, big these two countries are. You would expect trade between Russia and the US to be at a much higher level than it is. And of course, the reason it isn't at that much higher level is because the US is, or at least some people in the US, are doing everything they possibly can to prevent it getting higher. I mean, you know, you have all these sanctions that the US has been rolling out against Russia. You have these attempts now to try and prevent US investors from investing in Russian sovereign debt. You've got the way in which Exxon's massive investment in Arctic, in Russian Arctic oil and gas development, was prevented again by sanctions, which means, by the way, that the people are going to muscle in instead of the Chinese. So I don't really see how the US benefited from all of that. So, you know, to say that it's a three seems to me hugely optimistic. It shows that Putin still wants to improve relations with the US and is still, I think, hoping that issues like, you know, counterterrorism and economic ties might eventually be the route to rebuilding relations between the US and Russia and bringing them to a more civilized level. And of course, he again talks specifically about his conversation, his telephone conversation with Donald Trump. I think Putin still recognizes that Donald Trump did want better relations with Russia and does, I think, still want better relations with Russia. And he still wants to build on a personal relationship with Trump. But three is very optimistic. And I mean, the headwinds against any improvement in relations between Russia and the US are still exceptionally strong. You only have to read any US newspaper or go on to MSNBC or CNN or plow through, as I have to do, you know, all the various, foreign policy magazines and think tank documents to see how bad the atmosphere in the US against Russia is. And of course, you've still got all these military deployments that are going on all over the place. I mentioned just now, you know, how necessary good relations between Poland and Russia are. And I was just reading how the US has just deployed nuclear weapons in Poland. So there we are.
From Turkey, supposedly.
That's the, from Turkey. So as I said, you know, the Russians still want better relations with the US. They always have done. I don't see any real sign of anybody in the US, except possibly Donald Trump, wanting good relations with Russia. I mean, even Bernie Sanders didn't seem to want better relations with Russia.
So and he honeymooned there.
Donald Trump and Tulsi Gabbard, Donald Trump has had to face 4 years of being called a Russian asset and having his his campaign and his administration investigated and relentlessly abused because of that. And Tulsi Gabbard has been banished so that virtually nobody is aware that she's still campaigning. So where Putin sees any prospect of an improvement in relations between the US and Russia, I don't. And to say that it's a three seems to me absurdly optimistic. But clearly, he lives in hope.
Hope dies last. Alexander Akers, thank you very much. Guys, like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell. Please check your subscribe button once again, your subscription to our channel, because I am looking at the dashboard and YouTube is unsubscribing people in mass. So check your subscription once again and make sure that YT is not up to any tricks. What else? Donate to us, PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps out this channel a whole lot. Also look for our videos on SoundCloud in audio format and on iTunes podcasts in audio format. And Alexander, the Duran Shop merchandise, magic mugs, t-shirts. And I also think we have a 20% offer with a partner, the Patriot Beacon, which you're also going to talk about, which is really, really awesome, an awesome product. And they are also partnering with us. So Alexander, the Duran Shop, Patriot Beacon, special offer for our viewers.
Absolutely. This is the Patriot Beacon. It is an absolutely the best torch you can get. It's aluminium. It's incredibly strong. It has every conceivable appliance you can think of. It's solar powered, by the way. If you want to recharge your, it's got a sort of port there where you can recharge your iPad or your iPhone or your Samsung phone. You can smash your windscreen if you get trapped in your car. It has got all sorts of it can, it lights and it flashes and it does all sorts of amazing things. So you can see what a fantastic torch it is. In fact, it is the best torch I have ever had. Now, I need good torches. Can I explain why? Firstly, I am a person who likes to drive. I dislike intensely, air travel. So if I can drive somewhere, I always do. I recently drove all the way from London to Berlin. I love driving. And of course, if you drive through Europe in winter on congested roads in the middle of huge showers, you want a good, steady, reliable, safe torch. So if you run into any problems, you have one. And this is the best torch you can have for that. In fact, can I just also add another thing you can do with it? It's got a very strong magnet. You can attach it to your car, and it's also got, I'll just play quickly. You can hear, I hope, well, maybe you can't, but anyway, it's got its sound, and it's incredibly strong and rugged. So it's the best torch for somebody who drives around as much as I do, and you feel safe with it. And by the way, if you run into any unpleasant people, well, it can also protect you from them too. But the other thing it does is, as you can see, it is wonderful for walking your dogs, as I was doing last night. I didn't see very well in the dark, so I find that having this torch, I can keep an eye on my dogs, and when I do the beacon, really remarkably, they actually come. In fact, they did so just now. You can probably just see them there. There. They're listening. They listen to. In fact, here he is. He's just come to see it. So you could see how attracted he is to the beacon. So there we go. So if I run into any trouble, I can always summon my dogs by putting this beacon on. So you see, it is a most amazing torch in every respect. And by the way, because it's so well built, I gather it's got a strong aluminium body. I fumble a lot. I'm always someone who's dropping things and breaking things. So having a really strong, heavy torch, it means that I hold on to it better. And also, it's pretty much unbreakable. I mean, if anything collapses on it, or if you sit on it, or if some big weight falls on it, it remains intact. So it is the best torch you could possibly have, both for your car and if you're walking your dogs in the dark or in any other situation or environment where you need a torch, believe me. And also, we've also got all our other things in our shop. We're talking about, strong, heavy duty things. Well, I've spoken a lot about our magic mugs. You can see there the double-headed eagle of Russian Federation. We were talking about Mr. Putin in this program. And of course, that's exactly the double-headed eagle that he has on his mugs, which he drinks from. So if you want to share something with Mr. Putin, well, you can get it by buying this particular mug. But we have lots of other mugs. And I said heavy duty. Well, this isn't heavy duty at all. It's actually light and strong. But that's the point. It's extremely strong. And you can see that here I am, a person who fumbles all the time, and there's not a chip or a crack or a break on it, despite the fact that I've had these mugs, my magic mugs, my Duran magic mugs, for over a year now. So that tells you how good quality they are. And of course, it's not just magic mugs. We have our amazing shirts, polo shirts, our amazing polo shirts, which are some of the most stylish polo shirts you can buy anywhere. Long sleeved T-shirts like the one I'm wearing now, all 100% cotton, by the way. We've got short sleeve T-shirts. We've got V-neck shirts. We've got hats. We've got hoodies. We've got stickers. We've got ebooks on things like Russiagate and Ukrainegate and Brexit and Epstein in our shop. So come to our shop, buy these great things from the Duran, buy yourself a Patriot beacon, the best torch in the business. Support the Duran, be the great owner of these things, and Alex will tell you how.
Just go to theduranshop.com, And also for the 20% discount, there's a 20% discount on the Patriot Beacon if you use the code Duran20 on checkout. Duran20, that is in the description box as well. Alexander McCurse, Editor-in-Chief of the Durant, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.